You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. In the last hours of the session on Sunday night in Olympia, the state house failed to pass a critical fix to drug possession law in Washington. The state Supreme Court threw out the old felony drug possession penalty back in 2021. The temporary stopgap, which classifies drug possession as a misdemeanor, is due to expire July 1st. After going back and forth between the House and Senate with different versions of a new law, Democrats, who control both chambers of the legislature, thought they had a compromise bill ready to pass the House last weekend. They thought wrong. 15 Democrats defected and every Republican voted against the bill, so it fizzled and set up a potentially chaotic future for drug law in the state. Joining us now is Representative Greg Cheney, a Republican who represents parts of Clark County in Southwest Washington, including Ridgefield and Battleground. Hi, Representative. Thanks very much for being on the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So on Monday, we spoke to House Speaker Lori Jenkins about what happened in those final hours as the legislature's session was ticking away. And she expressed surprise that not a single Republican got on board with that bill to fix the Blake situation. Here's Speaker Jenkins talking on Monday about that.
It was a shocking turn of events to see that Republicans who had been articulating that they needed to have a gross misdemeanor crime for possession of drugs, and that was achieved in the bill, decided instead to vote to legalize methamphetamines and fentanyl and heroin across the state of Washington.
Jenkins blamed your party for de facto legalizing drugs in the state. Representative, what's your response to that?
Well, I think Danny Westmeat in Seattle Times said it better than I could, which is, you know, there's significant majorities in the Washington State House that are Democrat, significant majorities, Democrat majorities in the Washington State Senate, and also in the governor's office. So I don't think that is an accurate characterization of what happened. I think there was broad bipartisan support that the Senate Democrats, the House Republicans, and the Senate Republicans had negotiated those three caucuses, if you will. Unfortunately, it seemed that there was a group within the House Democrat caucus who would not vote for any bipartisan measure. And ultimately, my view is that's why the bill failed.
What were those discussions like leading up to last weekend's vote? You and Senate Republicans and Senate Democrats, as you say, seem to be aligned on certain fixes. What were the key parts that needed to come together in the legislation that didn't materialize for you?
Yeah, I think there was real concern in the final conference report that came out that we were asked to vote on, that it didn't have necessary safeguards for those individuals who are repeatedly violating the terms and conditions of, say, a diversion agreement. And just by way of background, I am a indigent defense criminal attorney, so I work in and for and with the drug and mental health courts for nearly 10 years now, or actually longer than 10 years.
Yeah, you know this system very well.
Right. And so I think there was real concern that in the bill as presented in the conference report and we were asked to vote on, was that someone could repetitively violate the terms of their diversion with no real ability for a drug court or a judge to hold that person accountable. And in my experience, that is absolutely critical. I think all the judges, the defense attorneys, the prosecutors, and the social workers, and the mental health and substance abuse counselors who are a part of those teams, everyone there understands there's going to be relapse. I don't think that's an issue. But I think where the problem is, if you will, is what do you do with those people who are continuing to relapse and clearly not taking advantage of the services that are being offered to them? And I think that was unfortunately left out of the bill. It was very unclear in the final version. I think there was broad agreement on accountability, again, from Senate Democrats, House Republicans, and the Senate Republicans. But unfortunately, the bill as presented didn't have that. And I had real concerns, and I have real concerns about that type of an approach. It seemed to me that we have phenomenal drug courts operating around this state, and none of the best practices of those courts were reflected in the final version of the bill.
So it wasn't simply that you wanted to see drug possession become a gross misdemeanor, which did end up in the bill. For you, there was a lack of addressing repeat offenders and what happens to folks who are back in the system again and again and again.
Right. And I can only speak for myself on that, but I was significantly concerned that this was a dramatic departure from the current drug court practices. In other words, again, everybody knows there's going to be relapses, but there's ways to, you know, hold people accountable, sanction them, but still accountability, I think, is a crucial aspect of treatment and holding yourself accountable for that. And that just didn't seem, there seemed to be no clear parameters by which a judge could say, okay, fine, we've given you every chance, you still have not done this. And unfortunately, there are those group of people out there. And at some point, those folks become a community safety hazard that the safety of the community needs to be balanced with a chance for treatment, even with relapses. And it went too far into the not holding anyone accountable rather than giving people a chance and even a second chance, and then for the safety of the community, ultimately putting them in jail. And I think that balance was lost in the final version. I think there were other issues with the bill. There seemed to be this overriding of all local zoning for things like needle exchanges. I know that was a key kind of concern. And again, it seemed like there wasn't a lot of discussions from the House Democrats prior to the vote on the bill as to where they might be willing to compromise in a bipartisan way.
Help me understand how this process went over the last month. I think a lot of folks watching this, they're frustrated that a consequential vote like this would come down to the last hours, which, as you will probably point out, this is, again, a Democratic-controlled legislature. So the timing with which these bills come to the floor, that's really in Democratic hands. But when we look at the way that the conference worked between the House and Senate versions of the bill, you voted for a previous iteration of this fix that had passed the House on April 11th, and that made drug possession a misdemeanor, which is a step down from where the last bill landed at the gross misdemeanor level. So what changed for you in the course of this negotiation process where you were on board with the April 11th version but not on the most recent one?
Yeah, I think the key, there was some bipartisan support, and whether or not it was a misdemeanor or gross misdemeanor, I thought that there was better safeguards in a lot of ways around the accountability aspect of what you do. And I want to take a step back, because a couple of days before the vote on the Blake on Sunday, we had voted 98-0 on reforming and expanding deferred prosecutions. Now, deferred prosecutions are if you are a DUI and you have an alcoholism problem, you can go into treatment to avoid jail time. But if you break that treatment, you're going to face jail time and the penalties associated with that. And so we actually expanded that, again, understanding that, you know, sometimes there can be relapses and recurrences. And so that voted 98-0. And so it was flummoxing to me then when 2 days later, the final version of the Blake bill came without the same clear parameters for what constitutes a violation, how violations for those folks who just aren't taking advantage. It was dramatically different than what we passed 2 days earlier with alcohol. And so I didn't understand why we would not put the same safeguards, procedural safeguards around repetitive violations for methamphetamine, heroin, fentanyl that we would around alcohol. It didn't seem to make sense when we had done the same thing in a very bipartisan matter 2 days before. And I think that was the key reason for my change. I wanted to make sure back in April the conversation was going in some form or fashion. But ultimately, you have to look to the bill that's before you and the language that's before you. And I just felt it didn't have sufficient procedural safeguards to keep the community safe in that final version. I think it would have tied judges' hands and just kind of given a never-ending relapse scenario without being able to hold folks accountable.
I think one of the things that's standing out to me is that nobody disagrees on the need for treatment here, that resources for helping people with addiction are necessary to address the drug crisis. But the most recent bill that the House tried to pass on Sunday tried to thread the needle on punishment. And that was between these progressive Democrats who want to decriminalize drug possession in most ways and more conservative Democrats and Republicans like yourself who believe that there need to be stiffer penalties. you are an attorney and you've worked in these drug courts for many years. What is the biggest difference between classifying drug possession as a misdemeanor and classifying it as a gross misdemeanor? I mean, does that change significantly the outcomes for these defendants?
I think for some folks it does. I'm not sure, speaking only on my own experience and behalf, I am not convinced that it makes that much of a difference in a practical sense in the court. There may be some things like it gives longer to investigate if you're testing drug substances and things like that. I think the key thing is the ability under the bill that was voted on late Sunday night, the ability of a judge after repeated violations of a diversion agreement, it was very unclear what the judge could do at that point. I think that's the larger issue, at least in my mind, is giving the judge the authority to say at some point for the safety of the community, you have to be held in jail. And yes, we want to get people treatment. I think we want to make sure they have treatment options ideally available while they're in a jail so you don't have to start that process once you get out of a jail. But there has to be some ability to protect the community at some point, and that just didn't seem to exist in the final package.
Ultimately, by voting down the bill, or perhaps we should say also by not shepherding the bill across the finish line, when we talk about the role of House Democrats here, the thing that's lost is not just the penalties, but it's also this big chunk of money for recovery that was going along with this bill. Funding for drug crisis centers, diversion programs, counseling, etc. Representative, do you worry that this political fight is going to end up just hurting more Washingtonians if we don't see that funding coming through?
Well, I don't think it's a political fight. I mean, to be clear, you know, I wasn't involved. Obviously, I'm in the minority party, so I'm not sure why the majority decided to bring this up late on the Sunday night, the last day of session. But I don't think it's a political fight. This is a fundamental, I think, disagreement between the package that was proposed and certainly where I'm at is we have to give the judges the discretion to be able to deal with these folks who are presenting a community safety hazard after having tried treatment, perhaps multiple times, to no avail. And so I don't like to characterize it in that. I think it's a fundamental policy difference, not just a political fight.
Yeah, fair enough.
I am concerned about the ability of particularly rural communities to access these funds. Oftentimes, I know in some of the courts that I work in, you know, we're talking about an hour drive to the nearest emergency room if someone is having an overdose problem. And so we need to make sure, I think, that I hope we can get to a bill, even if it's in a special session, that will work. But obviously that's far beyond me as a freshman and you know, the leadership, I'm sure, will be talking about that. It sounds like Governor Inslee mentioned something about that recently. But I think we do need that funding. I think it's critically important. But again, you can attach all the funding you want, but if you can't hold someone accountable after repetitive violations for the safety of the community, there has to be that balance. And unfortunately, that balance didn't exist.
Is there anything else you want to leave us with here about what it will take to get bipartisan support for this Blake fix? Because we heard from Speaker Jenkins that she believes that there is a part of her caucus, the Democratic caucus, that will not come on board with almost anything they would put forward to involve criminal penalties for drug possession. So she's really going to be relying on votes from folks like yourself who are willing to cross the aisle and help pass a Democratic bill on this. What do you want to leave us with in terms of what will get your vote or what Republicans are feeling right now as we wait to see what's next?
Well, speaking only for myself, you know, I would go back to the model of the deferred prosecution that we voted off by unanimous vote. Again, I think that strikes the right balance within the alcoholism context of community safety and rehabilitative treatment. I think there's a model there that can be used with narcotics, illegal narcotics and the like, that I think balances the need for treatment and funding for treatment with community safety. And so I think there's also concerns, as I mentioned, about, needle exchange programs and not just, allowing them to override all local zoning and suddenly locate into, say, a residential neighborhood. So I think there's some issues like that, that I do think there's broad ability to work on. And again, I think there was some broad commonality between Senate Democrats, Senate Republicans, and House Republicans to do something in a very bipartisan manner. And I think we were very, very close to that. Unfortunately, the House Democrat caucus went another way.
Representative Greg Cheney is a Republican who represents parts of Clark County in Southwest Washington, including Ridgefield and Battleground in the state legislature. Thank you, Representative, for stopping by and explaining where you're coming from on this.
All right. Thank you.
And when we spoke to House Speaker Jenkins earlier this week, we specifically discussed Republican Representative Gina Mosbrucker, who in a press conference following the vote said, we've had all session to come up with a workable plan that gets addicted people off the street and into treatment. I think many lawmakers on both sides of the aisle felt this 11th hour conference bill was wholly inadequate. Jenkins said this on our show on Monday.
It is really hard to hear that from Representative Mosbrucker, who got copies of drafts and requests for feedback multiple times over the last month and provided none. So I'm not, I think we were very open to hearing feedback and to negotiating, but you can't negotiate against silence. There's nothing to do. So we were guessing.
We wanted to give Representative Mosbrucker a chance to respond to that. She spoke with Soundside producer Sarah Leibovitz and said, quote, respectfully, we did negotiate. I spoke with Democratic Representative Jamila Taylor multiple times about coming to an agreement. We previously had a three-corner agreement with the Senate Democrats and Republicans and House Republicans, but we just didn't get there with the House Democrats. Mosbrucker noted concerns, including her desire to require public hearings for new drug treatment facility locations, require prosecutor consent when sentencing people to treatment programs, and she received letters from a variety of Washington law enforcement agencies urging her to vote no on the bill. Mosbrucker says this bill should never have been a partisan issue, and she wants to find a statewide solution. She also says she's willing to come back for a special session to sit down together and find something that works for everyone in the state of Washington. Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.